And welcome to another episode of Gopher Gridiron Radio. I'm Luke Buer.
And I'm GopherIllustrated.com publisher Ryan Burns, and we welcome you guys back to this breakdown edition of a tough almost comeback win for Minnesota, a 30-27 loss, a game that didn't really seem that close throughout the entire game. And then we saw a reason for hope in that fourth quarter from Demery Croft and this Minnesota offense with their three touchdown drives. But the issue is the first 45 minutes of the game were more or less pretty putrid for the offense, and the defense had some significant issues as well. So joining me to break this down, joining Luke and I to break this down anyway, is going to be my second cousin, former Golden Gopher offensive lineman, and the best Gopher football X's and O's follow on the Twitter machine. You can follow him at Derek_S_Burns. Mr. Derek Burns. Derek, how are things going for you tonight?
I'm doing well, Ryan. I appreciate it, and thanks for having me back. And win or lose, excited to talk college football.
All right, so let's get into this game. You know, when looking at the win probability on ESPN, to Ryan, to your point, Michigan State basically was a 75% or greater win probability starting basically at the 7:22 mark of the first quarter. There was a slight moment when the Gophers had an opportunity, but for the most part, this was Michigan State's game. It looked like the Gophers had a chance towards the end, but were unable to, you know, one, convert on either forcing another turnover or collecting an onside kick. So let's dive into this game a little bit. And let's focus right now first on the defense, because, you know, the one shining moment that they had in this game came in the offense in the fourth quarter. But, Derek, I think most people are going to want to talk some offensive line play here. And specifically, what was Michigan State able to do on that run toss sweep?
Well, yeah, they schemed Minnesota pretty well, had them scouted. And what they tried to do, in my opinion, was, first of all, run away from the inside, that teeth of the Gopher defense. We've talked about it. Their strength is up the middle, those guys in the box, tackle and inside linebacker. So they wanted to run away from that, I think, and they wanted to press the edge and really force Minnesota to bring their secondary up for run support. Another thing we've talked about in previous weeks is Minnesota is thin at secondary. They're playing rather conservatively, so they're not bringing extra bodies up. They're not playing a lot of press coverage. They're not using their safeties as a quick run support option. I think Michigan State saw that, and they wanted to force Minnesota to, you know, they brought many of those top sweeps. They brought two offensive linemen out on pull, and they had a fullback lead blocking. So they had essentially three blockers out flanked, in which case you've just got to get population to the outside to stop that. And I think many times the linebackers, you know, pursued, the defensive end pursued, but they were taken up by blockers, in which case it funnels to a defensive back. And that's where Minnesota struggled. I think they were, they were late at times. And then other times the run fits out of the secondary just were not clean, and that left things open. So that was, I think, what Michigan State wanted to do. And when they had early success, of course, they're going to keep running that until the Gophers adjust and they're able to stop it.
Yeah, it was extremely frustrating to watch that toss. And again, then they would come back with, I believe, weak side power. And it just, Minnesota didn't have any success stopping the run all day. And now this is becoming a theme throughout Big Ten play. So on the day for Michigan State, 50 rushing attempts for 245 yards. I believe running backs went for something like 6 or 7 yards a carry against Minnesota. And the thing that really had me frustrated to no end when I was watching back the film today was the amount of times they would pull, they'd run toss or whatever the running play was, and you'd see the running back, you know, slowly jogging like former Spartan running back Le'Veon Bell does in the NFL. He just lightly jogs, waits for his blockers to go, and then he goes. I mean, there were too many times where LJ Scott wasn't touched until he was 5 yards downfield, 10 yards downfield. And I counted on a play today against this Gopher defense where he was not touched until he was 22 yards down the field. That can't happen. And now that we're looking at this Gopher defense as a whole through three Big Ten games, this is a Gopher defense that's giving up over 5 yards a carry to the likes of Purdue, Michigan State, and Maryland. Well, this weekend that average should go down because you're facing an awful Illinois team at home for homecoming. But you look at the remaining part of the schedule, on the road at Iowa City, I can guarantee you Kirk Ferentz has the first three games of tape and is licking his chops in terms of this team against the run. At Michigan, not going to be easy there. You still have Wisconsin left in the schedule, plus Nebraska and Northwestern. It's just a team that can't figure out a way to really be consistent against the run, because you saw it in the non-conference. Maybe it's because of all the injuries Minnesota's had. They don't have Antoine Winfield right now, Keandre Thomas, Zoe Creighton. The list kind of goes on there in the secondary. But they need to figure out a way to stop this. And Derek mentioned it with the defensive backs and their run fit. The corners, and Derek mentioned it, because Minnesota plays their corners back because they're not trying to get beat deep, because they're not playing man press, because they don't trust their cornerbacks right now, because Kunle Ayinde made his first start of the season at corner after he played safety the entire year, because Minnesota didn't want to play Coney Durr, because Fleck self-admitted he's like 80-85%. So you have Kunle Ayinde, who I didn't – again, Derek, I guess, is the lesser of two evils. I think he did better against the run than Chenault did, but there were too many times where you'd watch a toss sweep and you'd watch whether it'd be the rush D end over there or the outside linebacker flowing over there. The outside blocker for Michigan State would seal the edge, and Chenault would be somehow outside of that instead of inside of that, trying to get up near the line of scrimmage to make the play. And he would take himself out of the play, or a secondary member would take a poor angle. They'd over-pursue. They'd come in too high. Again, if they're going to try and attack your edges with this kind of a play, you need much better play from guys in the secondary in terms of being willing to come up and deliver hits. And I know that there's also been some kind of discussion, behind the scenes in terms of Minnesota's fit, in terms of their run fit against that kind of a scheme, in terms of the way they were aligned, and maybe the previous staff would have had them aligned differently. Yes, they would have. But again, I'm not blaming it on I'm tired of this narrative, by the way, that Carter Coughlin is getting destroyed against the run. Does he get destroyed a couple of times a game against the run because he's giving up 70 pounds? Yes, but for the most part, Carter's actually been one of the guys that is coming backside to make the play or doing something of that sort. He's Minnesota's leading tackle for loss guy in Big Ten play with 4.5, too. And that's not all sacks. He's got like one sack and 4.5 tackles for loss, of which that makes 3.5 on run plays. So again, Carter's playing well. It's the issue of if your secondary guys aren't there on the edge to make the play, and Celestine and Barber, by the way, Barber was a man possessed with the amount of tackles he had to make because of his secondary not giving him a lot of help. Like, Celestine and Barber need some help, and they're going to need some help from their secondary, and they're going to need some help in terms of the lack of adjustments to this toss. That was also concerning for me, Derek. When you look at the first half, Michigan State runs it 21 times for 91 yards. They don't really have a lot of success. But in the second half, 29 times for 154 yards, it got worse. And I we talk about the second half adjustments in that non-conference, 0 points, 160 total yards allowed through three games. Now we're starting to see a very, very leaky Gopher defense in the second half of ball games.
All right, so, one positive I guess you could maybe take from this was the Gopher defense was able to force a handful of turnovers, albeit, they didn't make the difference in the game, but, it's definitely a positive there. One thing I wanted to touch on before we move to offense would just be, Michigan State, from a passing standpoint, didn't really have to do a whole lot. But curious to get your guys' thoughts on how they did attack Michigan State and how this might project forward. On the day, they were 9 of 18 for 120 yards and in the one interception by Duke McGee. Derek, what did you see out of this game, and do you see the trend going forward in terms of how they're going to play, these power running teams?
Yeah, so on the pass defense, for the first time this year, they switched and played quite a bit of man coverage. I think, in my opinion, they wanted to give themselves the opportunity to blitz more, play some more man coverage. I think they felt they matched up better with Michigan State's receivers and needed a little more help in the run. They did also play some zone, and I think the results were they looked a lot more comfortable in zone. They have looked very good in pass coverage in zone. We've talked about it in previous episodes. And in fact, in this game, the interception in the first half, really, really good play by Duke McGee and fooled the Michigan State quarterback. They gave a man look. They had been running man coverage early in the game. He thought it was man. They ran a switch route. It was zone. He stepped in front and made a nice interception, doing a really good job in zone of reading the quarterback. And so I thought they did look better in zone. They tried to do more man this game, and I don't think it – they didn't leave, let anything behind them. They didn't give up any deep balls in the in passing, but I don't think it fared too well. So I think going forward, this is the challenge, and this is why – what differentiates college football from say the NFL and even the Big Ten, I would say, is separated a bit from other Power Five conferences. You go from having to play a basketball on grass team like Purdue or Maryland, and you've got to have the bodies and the personnel to be able to run sideline to sideline. Your backside linebackers have to make tackles all the way on the opposite sidelines. They've got to cover passes. They've got to be dropped in the zones. And then you play in Michigan State, and you've got to bring guys up. You've got to have the weight to not get pushed around at the three technique. You've got to have linebackers to hit it up in the middle to be able to bring, like we already talked about, bring population and bring literally 8, 9, 10 guys up to stop the run play after play after play. So it's a huge challenge to have the personnel and the depth to be able to, from game to game, adjust to those schemes. So short answer to your question, Luke, I think they're still figuring it out. I don't think they're going to go back and look at what they had success with, where they did do well. I think if they had to do it over again, they would probably load things up a little more against the run. I don't think Michigan State posed the passing threat that maybe the concern that they've had all year about letting guys, deep and keeping everything in front of them. I don't think it was a huge factor in this game. I think if they had to do it over again, they would put more guys up front, bring more guys downhill to stop the run. And so I think that's probably going to be their takeaway.
I guess another takeaway I have is, again, in the third quarter, a couple of plays that stick out to me was Minnesota having to burn their first time out of the half because Michigan State breaks the huddle. And then Minnesota decides they're going to do mass subs on defense, four in, four out. And so Lewerke sees that. He's not stupid. He rushes everybody to the line, forces Fleck to call the timeout. Now, it looked like Fleck was arguing that, Minnesota didn't have ample time to get substitutions in. But, again, they already broke the huddle. They were coming up to the line. Then Minnesota made the decision to mass sub. Now, again, what are you doing mass substituting with the opposing team coming up the line? Because, again, Lewerke's going to do that every time, force you to burn a timeout. And then you also saw it in the third and goal situation that Minnesota, or I believe Michigan State has a third and goal from like three. Minnesota goes mass substitutions. And then the Gophers get extremely, extremely lucky because Lewerke comes up to the line, sees that Kunle Ayende isn't on the field. So there's no one on the right half of the field. They have someone split out there. He hurries them to the line. I think a guard gets nervous. He jumps forward. They get a false start. And so instead of the easiest touchdown of Lewerke's career, because Minnesota had 10 players on the field, it's a false start. Minnesota ends up not bending, or they don't break, they bend, and it's a field goal instead of seven. But I mean, how do you have only 10 guys on the field there in mass subs? How is Kunle off the field and how does nobody notice? That's kind of concerning to me too. And again, looking at this defense, I'm worrying about Jonathan Celestine right now because his play on Saturday, either he's getting extremely worn down because again, that is not the player I was accustomed to watching against Maryland, against Oregon State, against Middle Tennessee State. Maybe he's hurt. Maybe he was sick. But I mean, there were plays against Michigan State where, it just didn't look like the Celestine of old. And I do think we do have to talk about, Thomas Barber because 16 tackles, 2 for loss, and he had to go through contact. Guys that were 6 inches taller, 60 pounds heavier all day long, and he was able to rack up 16 tackles. And that's a workmanlike day, especially for that kind of game that it was with the conditions that it was. And, it's going to be interesting to see how Minnesota continues to play it, but this defense is not trending in the right direction right now. Now, again, I do understand that guys like Nate Umlor made their first career starts. Minnesota's very thin at the defensive end spot. Ideally, you'd probably have two guys that are 270 pounds. Instead, they have Umlor, who's probably 260, 265, but he's a true freshman. doesn't have 2 years of a weight and strength and conditioning program under him. Carter Coughlin's always going to be giving up at least 45, 50 pounds on every snap. So if your safeties and your backers are going to be running into the wash, it's going to be long days for Minnesota, especially if their corners aren't going to be able to come up and tackle like we've seen in previous years with guys like Eric Murray, Breann Body Calhoun, Jalen Myrick. And the talent isn't back there right now. And that's what Fleck is trying to fix in recruiting. But there's just too many plays for Michigan State that went for too many big gains. I look at the chunk plays that Michigan State accumulated running the ball. They had 8 plays over 10 yards, and they had, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. They had 6 runs over 15 yards against the Gopher defense. And then the passing game only completed, I believe, 9 passes. And of those, 4 of them went for 15-plus yards. Again, it's a defense right now that seems to be struggling, but I guess the likely solution is a terrible Illinois team comes to town this weekend so this Gopher team can hopefully gain some confidence. But this is a unit overall that's extremely vulnerable against the run right now, and we know what the things look like against the pass. So a lot of work to do for Rob Smith in terms of trying to get people healthy to show people what this defense looks like again.
All right, this isn't a question. This doesn't mean that I question Rob Smith, but I'm going to ask the question anyway. And it's actually very odd to say as a lifetime Gopher fan. But what do you think the fan base's patience is going to be with a Rob Smith? This was a previous staff that, you know, the identity of this team was defense, in large part because of the strength of their secondary. But they seem to be able to do more with less. Now I understand that, you know, they don't have the guys to fit the scheme, but you know, what is the fan base's patience with Rob Smith, having known, you know, the results that he had at Arkansas?
Well, I hope they'll be patient, because again, you saw what it could look like potentially against lesser opponents when you have guys like Antoine Winfield, Keandre Thomas, Zoe Crate, when you have adequate defensive backs. I mean, this defense can be pretty locked down, but I mean, Minnesota doesn't have the bodies at end. They don't have the bodies right now at corner. They don't have the bodies at safety. And with Derek and I continually coming on here every week and telling you how the lack of trust in their secondary right now is, I mean, this isn't what we're accustomed to with, I mean, I've already mentioned their names probably too many times tonight, but the Breann Bodies, the Eric Murrays, the Jalen Myricks, the Antonio Johnsons, the Marius Travises. I mean, you're moving Kunle to corner and expecting him to play extremely well for 65 plays a game. We've detailed the Chenault struggles this year. Jacob Huff is still getting work back in. Duke McGee looked good at times, and then he looked rusty coming off his 2-game suspension. So I'm more or less, you know, putting things in the fact that Minnesota doesn't have the adequate bodies, especially at end right now, especially on the defensive line, to kind of mitigate the issues they have against the run. Now, if these are the same issues Minnesota's having in 2020, 2021, that's a different story. But I mean, looking at the state of the defensive line, the cornerbacks and the safeties, I think it's tough to put, you know, be extremely worried about Rob Smith considering what he has to work with.
All right, so let's talk a little bit of offense. I guess maybe you could summarize the first quarter as missed opportunities, the second and third quarters as sputtering, and the fourth quarter is basically executing on opportunities. So Derek, what did you see, you know, offensively from the Gophers? And you know, you can take them in phases if you'd like.
Sure. They, you know, the sometimes when you go back, and I like to talk schemes and X's and O's, and it's fun to kind of break things down, but you hit the nail on the head. In the first half, sometimes you go back and you watch the film and you go to analyze things, and it's just too many mistakes. I mean, sometimes it's as easy as that. There's not a huge and you know, costly mistakes, and just not executing and not making plays. And that also put pressure on the defense, in the first three quarters. But I'm going to stick my neck out here a little bit and say I actually was impressed with the Gophers' game plan and scheme on offense. Some might sound preposterous given the output, especially in the first 3.5 quarters, but they were more apt this game to run play action on first down. They had opportunities to make, which I like to see. They had opportunities to make plays. The game script got a little bit flipped on them where they had to throw the ball more. I think they, you know, obviously would have liked to run more, but they had opportunities on those play action, you know, that we've been begging them to run. They had, you know, they ran a corner route, just totally torched the defense for a touchdown, and the ball's overthrown. You know, other plays just didn't come up and execute on some of those. They had numbers, you know, Michigan State. I didn't think they would load the box and run situations the way that Maryland and Purdue had. They did. So, you know, in more than 50, 60% of run situations, Michigan State was plus one in the box. And we've talked about, why aren't they going and play action? Why aren't they running? Well, this game, they were more apt to do that. They ran, you know, more balanced. And then, of course, as the game went on, they were forced to throw more. So I actually liked the game plan, to be honest. And I think they had an opportunity to make plays in the first half and get things going. And I think it was a, you know, a case of they just were very clunky and just did not put things together, you know, until in that fourth quarter. And I guess we can, Ryan, maybe if you want to jump in, and then we can talk about the end kind of and what changed. But that's how I saw the first, you know, first two and a half, three quarters unfolding.
Oh, where to begin about that putrid three quarters of offensive output? I mean, we can start with the fact that the Gopher special teams watches the Michigan State punter have one go through his fingers. Eric Carter then decapitates the punter. Jalen Waters almost scoops and score it. And you're like, oh, you know, Minnesota's got the ball at the Michigan State three. This should be seven. First play, Connor Rota drops the ball and takes a sack. And the interesting part about that one, Derek, before I continue to go on, is Minnesota was passing there. And then they passed in their final two plays. What did you think of the call there? You know, you have it within the 10-yard line. You have it within the 7-yard line. And the first thing you want to do is pass the ball. What were your thoughts?
Yeah, I may be not giving the answer you want to hear. Inside the 10-yard line, I'm a fan of play-action pass, and they've had success with that, and lead option. So I don't know, maybe straight drop back isn't the thing. And then of course they get behind the sticks and they have to throw on the final, but I think that I'm okay with it. But like we talked about, you got to execute, you know, you can't have those mistakes and then make yourself one dimensional on third down.
Yeah. The way Fleck explained it in the press conference afterwards was that, and from the play, from the, you know, the TV view of it, it looked like he was going to try to hit Wozniak in the flats to try and get him across the goal line. Obviously, he fumbles a very good snap from Weiler, takes a sack, and Minnesota then watches Rota roll to his right, throw it out of bounds twice. So instead of getting seven, you get three, which is inexcusable to me. And then again, Duke McGee gets an interception, and Minnesota gets to their 34. They go a grand total of 5 yards and kick a field goal, including missing Mark Williams, who we'll get to, by the way. Mark Williams was on fire. He was fuego the way he was able to get off the line. And I think, you know, we're going to have a little bit of a discussion about how good of a wide receiver coach Matt Simon is. But to have your two scoring plays in the first quarter go 8 plays for 1 yard combined, and you had the ball at the 3 and the 34 of the opponent, that's inexcusable. You can't win games like that. You look at the way Minnesota comes back in the final quarter, pulls it to 3. Well, imagine if they go 3 yards for a touchdown. Imagine if, you know, they go 34 yards for a touchdown. You know, imagine if Connor Rota remembers the play call when the entire line on the jet sweep. I don't want to have this turn into a Connor Rota bash fest because it's not fair to the kid. But in the same respect, how do you call the play in the huddle that it's going to Rodney Smith on jet motion, and then you try to give it to Shannon Brooks, who is not expecting it, so he fumbles. It's mind-boggling. It is mind-boggling. So, I mean, I think the Connor Rota experience is over. I know that Fleck said today we're not going to name our quarterback. Folks, you all damn well know who the quarterback is going to be if he stays out of trouble this week, and that's Demaryius Croft. So it's just – it's so refreshing to watch Demaryius Croft, because you all heard me on these airwaves on Gopher Gridiron Radio during fall camp. I was harping for Demaryius Croft, and there's a reason for that, and you saw it. I think you saw the ceiling of what this offense could be in the fourth quarter, because I don't think it gets much better than that. Now, I don't think that's going to be every drive. Obviously, it's going to regress back to the mean. But, I mean, this offense with a quarterback that, number one, doesn't immediately roll or fade away or do any of that nonsense for an offensive line that is giving him ample time. Now, he steps up into the pocket, moves past his first read. It's a hell of a concept. Henry moving past his first read compared to his predecessor or using his legs to be mobile. I mean, you're able to see why Demry Croft was, you know, me, soon to be, you know, new team member to go for Illustrated Kyle Goblerish. You saw why we were both harping for it. It's a clear decision. It's Demry Croft. The issue is Demry couldn't get himself, you know, he was playing himself out of the job with his off the field conduct. Now, I am, you know, knocking on every piece of wood that he can stay, you know, out of trouble this week, because if he can, I think this offense, you're going to be able to see it a little bit more and more, because it took a step in the right direction, a much needed step in the right direction, considering that this offense has been sputtering through two and a half Big Ten games before Demry took over.
All right, Derek, give us a little overview in terms of, you know, what changed or what was different in that, you know, second half of the fourth quarter.
Yeah, so Ryan touched on a bit, but with the change, I really think the key and the biggest compliment that I can give Croft was his ability to extend plays and step up in the pocket and create a run-pass threat and then throw the ball late. When you face a team that plays man press coverage, and early in the year we talked about how as we get into the Big Ten schedule and you play teams like Michigan State and Wisconsin, you were going to see more man press coverage. And in years past, that's really been tough for the Gophers to find an answer for. One of the main ways that you beat man press coverage is by extending plays, because it forces the defense, obviously, it forces them to cover guys longer and they can come back to the ball. But if you're moving as a quarterback and posing a run threat, it also makes you defend, you know, his scramble, and as well as a pass. So he was able to extend plays, which is how you beat man press coverage. And then the big key is he's able to extend plays with his eyes up looking downfield. So often you try and teach this, but it's very tough to pick up for quarterbacks, is you try and teach them to scramble, you know, to run to throw rather than run to run. To scramble and keep your eyes up, and you can teach that, and it looks good in practice and it looks good in 7-on-7, but you get in a game and you have two, you know, 260-pound defensive ends or a 320-pound D tackle breathing down your neck, the first thing you want to do is put your head down and run. So I think that was a big catalyst for the Gophers. And I would also say that we've talked about the route trees and the schemes that the Gophers want to run in the passing game with receivers. It's predicated on these guys being able to press downfield to take the safeties out of coverage and then run receivers underneath on crossing routes underneath the safeties. And that's where they had success. Both, I think Tyler Johnson's, the bobble touchdown that he had, and then later in the game, also that exact route combination, they ran the inside slot receivers or tight ends up the field, took out the safeties, and then ran the outside split receivers across the middle. And that takes time. They've had the pass blocking to be able to do that, which continues to be very good. But I think the difference was that Croft was
Who's willing to stay in the pocket, get to the top of his drop. If he does feel pressure coming in around him, he still stands tall, keeps his eyes downfield, and he's able to deliver a throw.
Yep.
It's a novel concept for the amount of quarterback play that, you know, we've seen come through Minnesota here just in this decade. But again, you're able to see what the capabilities of this offense with Kirk Shiraka, with Tyler Johnson, you know, as Minnesota continues to try and figure out their running game with Shannon only getting 7 yards rushing on 6 attempts. You know, the two running backs combining for 51 yards on 17 attempts for 3 yards a carry. Not what you want to see, but I think that has to improve because you actually have a running threat at quarterback again, so we can go back to what this RPO offense should be, and that's a threat at the running position. You saw 5 runs from Demry Croft for 43 yards, including him, I believe it was on a 3rd and 16, run towards the sidelines. Both the defensive back and the linebacker think he's going out. Croft slows down, then plants his left foot, accelerates up the sidelines like a By the way, have you guys noticed how straight up and down he is when he runs?
Yeah, he's really straight up and down. Did you guys see, it was like, I think Brock Vereen's tweet that he looks like the character in the movie Remember Titans, Rev, when he runs? I thought that was hilarious.
Brock Vereen's a good follow on Twitter, man.
He is.
Brock Vereen was a good dude here back in the day. But, I mean, it's just so refreshing to watch a quarterback that doesn't immediately flinch at the sign of pressure. One that doesn't have to roll, one that moves his eyes off. Again, you're able to see Demery make some throws. And on the interception, I know that Derek and I wrote about this in my GIF rewind, I know that Derek and I disagree on this. I mean, I've read Derek's reasoning on the Twitter machine, and I still don't agree with Croft throwing that there, Derek. I do understand that on the jet motion, you know, the safety comes up, but he knew immediately off the snap that it wasn't coming, so the safety goes back into coverage. And just the way that, yes, Johnson got an outside release, but, I mean, we're talking about 2 yards of space on the outside because the cornerback recovers. There's too many people there where Rodney Smith is sitting there in the flat for like five. So instead of, like a 15% chance of a 25-yard gain, I'd rather take the check down there. But in Croft's defense, his arm was hit. So that ball that was probably going to be placed near the front pylon or the 5-yard line ends up wobbling the 17 because his arm was hit by a defender. And again, I mean, Demery did, do some not so great things, but again, you're able to see the flashes. And the nice part about it is, I mean, you at least have an optimism, something there, because Connor Rota, there just wasn't a lot going there. I think he's going to end the Big Ten here with under 50% passing, more turnovers than touchdowns. We're looking at under 100 yards a game passing. And with Croft, there's at least a ceiling there that Minnesota can attain and what you can ultimately see this offense hopefully looking like two or three years down the line.
Yeah, let's also caveat that this is effectively, the fourth game that Demerkoff's played in his college career, right? I think.
Well, he played about three quarters when he was a true freshman.
Yep.
He's played about 50% of the snaps through three games so far this year. So, again, this kid is still a kid. I mean, I think he's played maybe a grand total of four or five collegiate games, but at least he's got 3 years to figure it out.
Mm-hmm.
If he can stay out of trouble. But, Derek, I know that you also want to talk about this, and you brought it up to Luke and I here in the pre-production meeting. But Mark Williams, the catch rate doesn't look good. He has 8 targets. And he only had 2 catches for 43 yards. But Rota missed him twice.
Yeah.
Both times on third down. Once for a touchdown where Mark Williams is, and Luke, you mentioned this, Mark Williams isn't wide receiver 4. He's wide receiver 6. Someone that really didn't look like they had a place on this roster. And now you go back and you watch the game tape. Mark Williams out here making Michigan State cornerbacks look like fools. And this dude, I mean, he hasn't had more than, 6 actual weeks with, actual meaningful reps. Derek, go on about what you think and what you've seen from Mark Williams, Tyler Johnson, and their ability to create separation, and then what Matt Simon, Minnesota's wide receiver coach, has been able to do at this position.
Well, I've been really impressed by their ability to get the release they want on press coverage. So many times on Saturday and in some of the previous games, you can see the corners are shading these guys to their support. If they have safety support, if they don't, they're playing inside. And so if you want to, for example, if you want to run a slant or a drag and you have a guy shading you inside, you've got to make a really good move to get an inside release. And both Tyler Johnson and Williams were able several times to just get a fantastic jump off the ball. And I know that's kind of Tyler Johnson's game, but that really bodes well if they're able to keep that up against other Big Ten competition. It just allows it means those guys are going to get a release downfield and they're not going to have to run things only like hitches and outs and timing routes to kind of come off press coverage. If they're able to continue to do that, that's going to open a lot of things up. So I give a lot of credit. It appears, and you guys know the coaching staff a little bit closer than I do, but whatever they're doing, coaching the receivers, it's working. I have to give credit. When you have a guy, as you mentioned, that's a third or fourth string guy coming in, and he's able to get off press coverage, get open, and he's running free in the secondary, that's a good sign. And so I would just also add, it's also nice to see the Gopher coaching staff really making a concerted effort to get Tyler Johnson isolated in single coverage. You saw in the game on Saturday, they ran more trips formations, and they had Michigan State scouted. They knew where they wanted to provide safety help. So many times they split out Johnson as the wide far wide receiver, and they ran the inside receiver in the slot or the tight end on a seam route or something up the middle to force the safety to double team that route, which then would leave Tyler Johnson isolated in man coverage. And when he has those situations, we've seen it in the games previous and certainly on Saturday, they weren't able to hold him down with man coverage. I mean, he was able to run free and like we saw in the third and fourth quarter, able to come up with some huge plays on those passes.
Yeah, Mark Williams, the way he was able to create separation consistently throughout the game, and I understand that his quarterbacks weren't always able to find him, but the way he's able to create separation is just remarkable. And again, it's for a kid that really doesn't know the wide receiver position because he came to Minnesota as a quarterback, and for the year of Tracy Clay's, he was alternating between quarterback, wide receiver, and he played a little bit of defensive back, and they didn't know where does Mark Williams have a role in this team coming up this season? There was still some discussion about moving him back to defensive back with all the injuries. And now you see like 2 weeks of him getting starter reps starting at Purdue. And now he's out here creating separation and he's open. And I mean, also, I guess Tyler Johnson, folks, is really good. And that's the kind of analysis you come to this podcast for. But 8 receptions for 106 and 3. And just watching back, I mean, I encourage you, by the way, to, before you listen to this, I know we probably should have said this at the start, but go watch the GIF rewind. I have 43 GIFs from this game. Watch all of those, and then you can pull up the podcast and kind of follow along. But the way Tyler is just able to create separation off the line, do what he wants, and then getting immediate separation from his route if he's not being helped out by, as Derek said, the route trees that, and just the different schematic things that Kirk Schrock is trying to do to get him open. I mean, he is a special player. And he's just going to have such an immense ceiling here by the time he leaves the University of Minnesota if he can still maintain his health just like he's been so far this season. And again, the quarterback play in theory should only get better here at Minnesota. But I think Matt Simon and PJ Fleck, obviously Fleck being a former NFL wide receiver coach at the collegiate level, also spends a lot of time with this wide receiver group. But Matt Simon, the Farmington native, has this wide receiver unit playing at such a high level right now that, I mean, you're just hoping that this quarterback play in terms of Demery Croft can continue to find them throughout the remainder of the 6 games. Because if they can, again, that's only going to help the running game. Because I continue to notice, and Derek's the one that brought this up, when Minnesota's running into even boxes, so 6 versus 6, they're having success. The issue is they're running still too much into plus boxes, but if you actually have a threat at quarterback to be mobile, if you actually have a threat at quarterback to be accurate, I mean, that is going to change the way that defenses scheme against you immensely, and that's where we could see Shannon Brooks and Rodney. So, I mean, there's a lot to be optimistic about when the most recent thing we all saw on defense was 3 touchdown drives from Demery Croft. Now, how much of that is, you know, Michigan State taking their foot off the gas pedal, Minnesota kind of just going off the scripts because, you know, they're down by double digits again. And again, scheme kind of dictated the fact that, or game flow anyway, that Minnesota passed more than they ran for the first time this season. But, I mean, you can't help but be optimistic about this Gopher offense considering what it looked like. What it could potentially look like with Demery Croft as your starter.
I guess that was going to be kind of my next question, or along those lines. But you know, to close out here, what is your, each of you guys, you know, what is your position and feel following, you know, that good second half of the fourth quarter? Are you optimistic going into the second half of Big Ten play, or are you expecting kind of more of the same of what we've seen? Derek, why don't you start?
Well, I think what I'm most curious to see the changes in the running game, because again, coming down to numbers, Ryan already touched on it. I think teams are going to, until proven otherwise, they're going to continue to try to run plus boxes and running situations. So it'll be interesting to see if they're more apt to throw downfield or run some more play action. Like I said, they called it more in this game, just weren't able to have success early on. So it'll be interesting to see if they come back to that. In the running game, what I would expect them to do is come back to, I know they're probably not going to want to run Cross a lot because they want to keep him healthy. So I don't expect him to get a lot of carries, but I do expect them to come back, probably run some read option. However, I'll caution people by saying if they run read option and it's in the plus box, I don't think you're going to see the success that everybody, I don't think it's going to be the miracle silver bullet that people are expecting. But that being said, I do think they'll come back to that a bit. It'll also be interesting to see if they come back to the jet motion and then the weak side lead option that they ran with Rota in previous games that ended up with a red zone fumble and they sort of tossed that in the garbage and didn't come back to it. It'll be interesting with Croft if they come back to that, because that was a really nice combination to off of inside zone to come back with jet motion, run jet sweep as a threat. And if they're overloading the jet side, they could come back with lead option on the weak side. And then lastly, what they haven't shown, I don't know if it's in their bag of tricks, but off that lead option, if you get teams cheating that, you can bring both running backs in the backfield, run lead option, and maybe this isn't coming off great on radio, but better to draw it up on a board, but run lead option and then run the shovel pass underneath it. So if you get teams cheating on the lead option, you could bring two running backs in the backfield, start with lead option motion, and then shovel back underneath it. And so that would be a really nice play combination with two running backs in the backfield. So they have a lot of options. They've tested the waters on some things, haven't executed great, but it'll be interesting to see how much they're apt to run play action in a loaded box and how they use Croft a little bit more as perhaps a running threat. You know, I think they'll be judicious about it. I don't think they'll go overboard, but I'm optimistic at what, from what I saw.
Yeah. I want to talk a little bit of special teams here before we round it out, Luke. I want to talk about the fact that Emmett Carpenter hits both field goals in the first quarter, again, in a tough playing condition. That was the monsoon just 30 minutes prior. You know, he gets his plant foot down and he's able to convert his from 25 to 47. I do have an issue, though, with the coverage teams. And that's the fact that on kick returns, Connor Hayward, the returner for Michigan State, averaged 38 a kick. That's not good. And Minnesota didn't really get a whole lot from their kick return game, especially when, unfortunately, Shannon's knee is down. The coverage teams, in terms of the return units for Minnesota on punt return and kick return, haven't been very good. You haven't been able to see anything in the punt return game. And then the kick return game, Shannon Brooks is encountering folks far too early at the 15 and 20. And Fleck addressed that a little bit after the game, and I agreed with that when I watched the tape back, was the return units for both teams leave a little bit to be desired right now. It's a great time. It's a great thing they have an opportunity to change their best against an abysmal Illinois team at home. I thought Ryan Santoso did. He did fine with an average of 43. But again, I want to see more from the return units. I want to see more, in terms of the kickoff unit too. Again, 38 average on three kick returns is unacceptable, and that needs to change for Rob Wenger's unit. In terms of on the offensive side of the ball. Again, I'm interested to see what Minnesota's offensive line looks like, because Vincent Calhoun goes out. Fleck talked about it in the post-game press conference as well, that I don't know that Sam Schluter's ready to play as a redshirt freshman right now, but he has to because they don't have any other options. Garrison Wright did get some time there. They did try Quinn Oslin at guard when Vincent went down and keep right out at tackle, but I don't think that experiment went particularly well, and that's why you saw Minnesota slide right back into guard. But the offensive line is going to have to continue to stand tough, because they have six more games and they're getting very, very thin there, especially if Vincent Calhoun is going to miss some time, because it doesn't look like Nick Conley is going to be back anytime soon as well. I'm hoping that the running game can benefit from having a mobile quarterback that can also use his arm. And then on the defensive side of things, Rob Smith's got his work cut out for him. Again, we talked about it. Through three Big Ten games, they're averaging over 5 yards a carry. They're averaging over 200 yards a game against them. And we know that the secondary is extremely thin. So, again, when we just look forward to the next week, you know, Fleck likes to talk about how they're 0-0 right now. Well, it's a good thing they have an Illinois team who just got beat by double-digit points by the Fighting Jerry Kills of Rutgers. This is a Rutgers offense that just put up 35 points against Illinois. Illinois in their last four games, their defense has given up on average 39 points a game. So you look at this Minnesota offense, I mean, you can't help but think this could be a 30-plus point outburst for this team if they can figure out some things. And on the defensive side of the things, looking at this Illinois team, they've thrown 11 interceptions already. That's not very good. They fumbled the ball quite a few times already. I mean, this Illinois team, the Fighting Lovie Smiths, they're not very good right now. So hopefully Minnesota is able to capitalize on that, which should be a warm afternoon at TCF Bank Stadium, highs in the 60s. So let's hope that this – by the way, Luke, did you see that what the line was on this game?
Yeah, they were
like
four.
It's minus 14.
Yep.
We were talking about this in the press box. Like, what is Minnesota going to be favored by? And then you see, because we thought it was going to be like seven or eight, and then you see 14.
Mm-hmm.
Boy, oh boy.
But did you see that Football Study Hall has it at 14 too?
Now, in theory, should this game be that? Yes. But until Minnesota can prove, you know, that their defense can stand up, that their offense outside of the, you know, that their defense or their offense was not a fluke outside of the fourth quarter with Croft there. I understand Illinois is bad, but they must really think that Illinois is really bad. So we will have to wait and see, boys.
All right. Well, thanks, everybody, for listening. Again, if you enjoy the podcast, subscribe, rate it on iTunes, share it with a friend. Also, check out Ryan's work on gopherillustrated.com. And,
speaking of Gopher Illustrated, quick,
yeah.
There is a note to watch. By the time you may be listening to this, maybe you're commuting to work Tuesday morning. We are going through a transition tonight, Monday night. We are going from the Scout platform to the 24/7 network, considering that CBS owns both. They want to merge them into one. So the exciting news is that not only are we going to the CBS network, we're going to be getting Gobi, someone I have an extreme amount of respect for. He runs their 24/7 site. I can assure you that there is no one else in the world that knows more about Gopher football and Gopher football recruiting than Gobi and I. Now we're on the same team. I can assure you that the coverage can only get better because, again, he and I are the only two ones on this planet who know more about football and football recruiting for the University of Minnesota. Now that we're on the same team, there's never been a better time to give us a look. So if you've been a longtime listener, now we have someone I have a tremendous amount of respect for in Gobi. It should be a very good time here as we get into the recruiting months of November and December. So we appreciate it, y'all.